I mean, it's for the benefit of not just the farmers, the community. In rural communities, it's very difficult to get really healthy food, and we have a lack of that. So we need to find a way to help in low-income families to get access to organic food, natural food. So if we have those win-wins with these programs, we need to focus on those.
Gives me a lot of hope, actually. The idea that people can access good local produce at a fair price.
Welcome to the 360th installment of Ear to the Ground, the Land Stewardship Project's podcast on family farming, regenerative agriculture, community food systems, and local democracy. I'm Brian DeVore, editor of the Land Stewardship Letter. Here are some troubling statistics. In 2023, 18 million U.S. households were food insecure at some time during the year, according to the USDA. That figure is up from 17 million in 2022. Food insecurity is defined as a situation where people can't access the food they need to live their fullest lives. In short, these are people who, in the land of plenty, simply aren't getting enough to eat. It's a problem throughout the country, but more common in rural areas. The USDA says that the food insecurity rate is around 12% in rural communities versus 10.5% for all households. Rural areas comprise less than two-thirds of all U.S. counties, but 9 out of 10 counties with the biggest food insecurity rates are rural, according to Feeding America. This is particularly ironic given how these rural communities are often the center of agricultural production. Meanwhile, there are plenty of farmers who are willing and able to produce food for local eaters in their communities, but who are stymied by a marketing and distribution system that's structured around commodities like corn and soybeans. This troubling gap between farmers and eaters was on my mind recently when I visited Rodrigo Calla's farm in western Wisconsin's Barron County. Rodrigo, who raises produce, chickens, hogs, and sheep, is participating in a program that's trying to reduce some of that food insecurity in rural areas while supporting farmers who produce fresh, nutritious fruits and vegetables, meats, and value-added products. The Wisconsin Local Food Purchase Assistance Program pays farmers a fair price for the production and then distributes that food to local food pantries and food banks. Called LFPA for short, versions of the initiative exist in other parts of the country and are often structured around a partnership between state departments of agriculture and local farm and food nonprofits. The USDA administers the program, and funding is provided by the Federal American Rescue Plan. In Wisconsin, the program has been up and running for 2 years, and it's produced some impressive results. In 2024 alone, 125 farmers from throughout the state sold $1.8 million worth of food through the program. While visiting Rodrigo's farm to learn more about the initiative, I also chatted with Mike Lenz, who, along with his wife Jody, operates Threshing Table Farm in Star Prairie, Wisconsin. Like Rodrigo, the Lenzes have been selling produce through the LFPA program the past 2 years. I was struck by how the farmers were not only pleased with the economic boost the program is providing them, but with how it gives them a chance to feed local folks in the community who normally may not have access to fresh, nutritious food. While at the farm, I not only talked to Rodrigo and Mike, but also Katie Crock and Tay Fetke. Katie works for the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection and coordinates the LFPA program in the state. Tay is the farm education manager for Marble Seed, which is one of the organizations partnering on the initiative. Also partnering is the Wisconsin Food Hub Cooperative, which helps distribute the food, and the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Rodrigo, Mike, Katie, and Tay talk to me about how a program like this can be a win-win for farmers in their local communities, and how it could help set up a future market infrastructure that better connects local farmers and local eaters. Katie started our conversation by describing the program, and Tay explained how farmers get signed up to participate.
LFPA is a local food purchase assistance program. So as the program coming out of the USDA that DACAP received, we work with our partners Marble Seed, Wisconsin Food Hub Cooperative, and Wisconsin Farmers Union. So we have contracts with local producers around the state. This year we have 125 producers. We purchase food from these producers, and that food goes to hunger relief organizations, so food pantries and food banks.
Do you have an idea of, so how long has it been going?
For 2 years, 2023 and 2024.
Okay, so what's kind of volume are you handling through that? Do you know?
Yeah, so last year we purchased $1.8 million worth of food from local producers, and this year, $1.8 again this year.
Okay, yep. And how many producers?
This year we had, 2024 we have 125 producers, 2023 we had 138.
And so it's produce, is it any other, or is it just produce?
Produce, meat, and value-added products.
Okay, and pretty much across the state,
yep, these are farmers? The whole state of Wisconsin.
Do other states have this program in place?
Yep, other programs do LFPA, but they may have a different model. So ours is direct to farmers. So we work with farmers directly to do the purchasing, and then they go to organizations where a lot of other LFPA programs gave the money to organizations like food banks to then work with the farmers.
How does this work? If you're a farmer who's signed up through this thing, what are some of the steps for them to actually get paid through this and all of that?
Yeah, so we put out an application in the fall just for farmers to apply and explain a little bit about their farm and what they're interested in offering, and then we make the selection process. We prioritize working with historically underserved farmers, getting an idea of what their farm can offer the program. Then we move to accept applications. This year it was in December, and then start the contracting process. So we identified, you know, how much acreage they have, what they're growing, to determine a contract amount. Contracts ranged from $5,000 to $25,000 in 2024. And then there's an onboarding process. So we have a meeting for the farmers for wholesale readiness and onboarding into the program to explain the payment process, to explain kind of how to move towards more of a wholesale model on their farm. We work with a lot of farmers that are either farming for farmers markets or CSA, so it is a little bit a different model for them to sell. So we do some training around packaging, you know, in cases, packing to spec, so they can build their wholesale capacity.
And then they're responsible for transportation, aggregation, that kind of thing?
So we work with the Wisconsin Food Hub Cooperative, where they have money in this program to move product around the state, which is super beneficial to the farmer. Anytime a, you know, truck can pull up right to the farm and load up and take it, takes that pressure off the farmer, and it's a huge win-win. We also work with some farms there's some connections with food pantries, and farms will, the food pantry will pick up directly from the farm. And that's great because it's just building connections, you know, for if, you know, in the future they can work more closely together. We've had really success Hunger Task Force in Milwaukee. They've been able to purchase outside of the LFPA programs and work with the farmers in the LFPA program to just sell more of their products. So it's been hugely beneficial that way.
So, I'm sorry, how many farmers or producers did you say that you worked with?
Yeah, 125 this year and 100 and I believe 38 last year.
Okay. So, and $1.8 million in was kind of the purchasing. So that's a pretty, you know, that's local. And I guess one thing, Mike, I know you were just talking about that for you, maybe describe your kind of how you've been associated with this program, and you said this is really something that's you've seen some economic returns on it immediately and in the community a little bit.
Correct. I mean, our spend now has been for 2 years with this program, and we provide into a local food bank. We were able to hire 14 high school and college kids that are local to us, and that money stays local to our area. It allowed us to hire a few more of those kids. Of that 14, it probably allowed us to hire four or five more for the sales that we're going to have for this program. And then the food itself stays local. Food bank that we provide into, I believe it's 32 different food pantries that they provide produce to. So it's hitting Polk, St. Croix, Pierce, Pepin counties. Mm-hmm. So it stays local. The money spent from the state stays local to our area, and the produce stays local to our area to help the underserved and needy people that really need good quality produce.
And you've always emphasized your CSA serves mostly a rural kind of, serving a big twin cities market or an urban market, because you really feel like that's where that food, people in rural areas need to eat good food as well.
Correct. Jody and I started our farm with the idea that people in the rural community need good food too. And we focused on providing our food locally to us, not going deep into the cities for shares. I think we crossed the river and it's a few shares in Stillwater, and then the bulk of our shares are in St. Croix County.
Do you have a rough idea what economic difference that's made to your farm? Have you been involved with both years?
Yeah. Like I said, it's allowed, for us, it's allowed us, I know, for at least four people that we've hired extra to our farm because of this program to help bring in the produce and take care of it. And it's helped us as farmers because we've made the contracts in the fall. Unlike CSA, the contracts there for this, and we know we'll have that sale. Whereas CSA, we don't know what our total sale is until May, sometimes June, when we start our deliveries.
That's a super good point. You're able to, because that's part of the reason I think I've talked to you guys before about your CSA. That was what drew to you, is you can plan ahead. So that spring time and late winter is a way to plan ahead what you're going to have to produce and what kind of market. But this is pushing it even further with the fall.
Correct, correct. In allowing us to budget for employees, for the kids that we hire, and the adults that we hire that are local to our area. It's just a wonderful program. The good produce, fresh produce, going to people that want it and wait for it to come in.
Great. So, Rodrigo, you've kind of had a transition. You were, maybe talk a little bit about the transition on this farm. You were focused completely on produce. You've tried CSA. You've tried different marketing models. Can you describe a little bit, give a little background on kind of where you're at and where you're at today a little bit?
We started this farm in 2008, and we really, at the beginning, we really focused on produce. We grow 60, 70 different things, but few years later, we try as the CSA for 3 years, don't work for us. Then we just focus on wholesale on produce. Then we have issues with climate change. We get black rot and alternaria in our ground. So then we losing money a few years. Right now we have a diverse farm. We grow produce and we raise chickens, sheep, and hogs. I mean, we see an economical impact in our farm in a positive way because we make money that way. And I think we try to simplify our operation, just focus on chickens. Mm-hmm. And I think we have some connection with other companies. And I think it's working okay.
It sounds like the livestock's helped improve the soil health a little bit, too. It was pretty worn out when you came here.
Yes, a lot. I mean, we have a few years we don't buy any fertilizer. Mm-hmm. So we get everything we need on our farm. So for us, try to figure it out between food safety and soil health and marketing development. And I think it's very good for our farm. Mm-hmm.
So you're involved with the LFPA as well, correct?
Yes.
Can you describe a little bit how that's working for you? What are you marketing through that and how that's kind of working?
I mean, marketing process for farms is very difficult. Yeah. I mean, it's no matter what kind of culture are the farmers, but markets are tough. Yeah. So if we have more programs like this, I mean, it's going to be even beneficial for the farmers. I mean, we need to encourage the government to put more money on this kind of program, so that way more farmers, they can stay on the farms.
So what are you marketing through LFPA right now, and have you been doing it the last 2 years as well?
2 years.
Okay.
Last year we sold produce, tomatoes, peppers, winter squash, onions. And this year we're gonna sell pork too.
And are they coming to pick it up? Is that how that's working? So that must be huge.
They helped me in many different ways. Try to figure it out about insurance, about places where we can butcher or hogs. and all the helping us coordinate the shipments, the people who are going to pick it up the produce, the time, it's calls back and forth. And really for farmers, it's very beneficial, these kind of programs for the succeed of the farms.
And do you have a rough idea of what economic difference it's made for you in the last couple of years?
Yes, it's way easier to try to focus on the production side instead to try to grow the things or raise the things and then delivery and focus on all different stages on the production. No, it's for us, for farmers, it's really, really beneficial just to stay in the farm, focus on the production, and then we can increase our production that way.
Have you increased production of certain things because of the program?
Yes, yes. I mean, last year they buy 15,000 for us. This year they're gonna buy 15,000 too. So they
$15,000 worth.
Yeah, this year they're gonna get pork from us. So we have more options to sell our produce and our livestock.
So what percentage of your overall farm income would that represent?
I think it's 20%.
Okay.
20%.
And you don't have to worry about shipping it, aggregating and all that.
Yeah, everything is contracted, everything is signed. So the only thing what we need to worry is to produce that.
I've seen you speak a couple times, and I know one thing you really emphasize, and I know you work with the Latino Economic Development Center, where you talk to farmers, I think, all across the country and in different areas. And you really know how to push the pencil on numbers. You're like, don't do farming unless you can make it pay. Yeah. So this must be part, I know this isn't your, this must be part of kind of a array of things you're trying to really make this pay. And because I know you're willing to drop an enterprise when it's not paying its way and that kind of thing.
Yes. I mean, the only way to keep farmer in the ground is to make money. If we don't make enough money, what we're going to do this? We can find another thing to do. So for me, it's very important to teach the farmers or to let the farmers, like, if you don't make enough money on this produce, don't do it. I mean, that's the only way to keep the happiest on the farms, yeah. The farmers on the farms.
Do you guys want to talk about kind of the future of the program? Or
as of right now, the program will be ending June 2025. But as organizations, we are definitely trying to find different outlets and continue on working, trying to find different funding for the program to keep it going because it's such a great program. But right now, it's just providing our producers and partners with resources that they can use in the future to build these markets and continue what they do. So
what would you, if anybody has any suggestions for, if someone is looking at a program, getting a program like this started, do you have any suggestions on how to get something like this going? Or, I mean, I know that this is USDA funded, but if there was different funding, I don't know. You think about that?
I would say, for food banks to look at what they have available, and I know it's very difficult. They're operating on very small budgets, and they're trying to get as much food as possible out to people. But fundraising around this effort of local food to local families, I think, can be super beneficial. And just get now that this program's existed and it's been for 2 years, we can show the accomplishments. Yeah. We can show that we've moved a ton of produce around the state, and meat and tortillas and, canned goods and pickled goods. And we can show that it's been all across the state, that it's benefited producers. Producers have dropped farmers markets because they've moved into this model. And, that's just more time on the farm. And that's what we have to do as a state, as a country, as the globe right now, is make it easier for farmers to farm. Yeah. So, continue. I think we can show the success of this program. We can show that, purchasing local is beneficial for food banks. It's just getting them the money. And, the easiest way to do that is to run it through a program like this. But if they can fundraise around that effort, if they can, I've seen innovative models from CSA farms that have asked their customers to donate, and then they've been able to donate extra boxes to food pantries and just, kind of build out their marketing that way. But just to get the customers, their customers involved in supporting farm-to-food access, I think can be very beneficial.
I would think, just hearing you guys talk about this, that there are these side economic benefits in that drivers
people who have to sort the food, who have to process it, if it's meat or whatever, that there's all these side economics. Is that something you guys have been able to kind of tote up a little bit, or is that still something you're trying to figure out? Is just kind of how much of an economic benefit the side, kind of the things that are that people don't think about, but you got to have that if you're going to have any kind of a local food system kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't think we've done really part of this program is we're doing evaluation, okay. And we're going to be presenting these results. So I think we'll try to gather some of that. But it's so true that agriculture has gone through so much consolidation, yeah. And the more we can have more enterprises doing this work, the easier it is for farmers, and the more economic opportunity there is for the rural areas across the state. So I think that's huge. That's another great thing that we've done in this program, and looking forward to looking at those results and sharing that.
It just seems like a real rural economic argument to me. I had one last question about somebody could explain what it's called the Wisconsin Food Hub is. What is that a nonprofit, or what is that entity, or somebody can describe that a little bit?
Yeah, so it's a cooperative, so they have a board of directors, started with some farmers getting started up there. They have routes across the state. They work with other aggregators as well, and, you know, they don't bring food back necessarily and hold it for a long time. It's kind of coming in and then going out the door. So yeah. It's been a huge, huge benefit to the program to have them picking up from the farmers, and, you know, they're working within other programs too, like local food to school, and then they have some other larger accounts that they're moving product through as well. But just a great opportunity for small to mid-sized farms to use their organization.
One last question. I always say one last question, and I always think, for Rodrigo and Mike, I'm going to ask the same question. I guess farming is really tough. I mean, just it goes without saying, and the economics don't get any easier. Is a program like this that kind of, I guess, is getting good food to local people and is not just, it is also returning economic benefit to the community, does that give you hope? I mean, that kind of, if there's people who are thinking about this kind of thing in that big picture way of how farming can be this rural economic engine that's not just 1,000 acres of corn and beans kind of thing, and how it can then benefit people who are actually eating, you know, and in the rural community and maybe don't always have access to healthy food. I mean, does that give you a little bit of hope, I guess?
Gives me a lot of hope, actually. The idea that people can access good local produce at a fair price, that was part of the contracting thing, is we worked together to set our price. So we got a very fair, equitable price for our produce, and the shipping, all of the pieces that we've talked about today help build and strengthen our food systems in this country. The fewer and fewer people making food, the bigger and bigger the problem's going to be. We want more people producing food locally, not less.
Rodrigo, when you say words like black rot, I think, oh my gosh, farming is really tough. But yeah, you really are committed to farming. I know you've really duked it out here on the farm, and you talk to a lot of farmers about some of the challenges out there, but you apparently believe in it. But does this give you hope a little bit, a program like this?
Yes. When we see, how much this government gives subsidies for corn and soybean growers, I mean, they need to put more money on people who grow food. I mean, it's for the benefit of not just the farmers, the community. And in rural communities, it's very difficult to get really healthy food, and we have a lack of that. So we need to find a way to helping, low-income families to get access to organic food, natural food. So if we have those win-wins with these programs, we need to focus on those kind of things.
That's a really good point. I'm glad you brought up the corn and soybean. It's like, why is money going to this? Well, look how much has gone into that.
I will tell my neighbors when we're sitting around, you walk a mile in your field, and I'll walk a mile in my field, and we'll see who starves first.
People, they need to understand, with COVID-19, we have a little big of what can happen.
Yeah, how fragile the food system is.
Yes,
yeah.
If we don't figure it out what can be in the future. COVID just give us like a teaspoon of what it can be in the future if we are not prepared. So that thing give us space for thinking and for figure it out and for fix that. So when we're talking about the relationship between farmers and the community, I mean, right now is the time. It's not tomorrow. It's not next year. It's now. What we gonna do for fix those problems?
For more on the Local Food Purchase Assistance Program, see the podcast page for Ear to the Ground episode 360 at landstewardshipproject.org. If you have comments or suggestions about this podcast, contact Brian DeVore at bdevore@landstewardshipproject.org, or you can call 612-816-9342. It helps us greatly if you can give Ear to the Ground a rating on whatever podcast platform you utilize. And word of mouth is the best way to spread the news about our podcast. If you like what you hear, tell at least one person about LSP's Ear to the Ground. Thanks to Laura Borgendale, a Western Minnesota musician, for Ear to the Ground's theme music. And a special thank you to all of Land Stewardship Project's members who make initiatives such as this podcast possible. If you're not a member, visit landstewardshipproject.org to learn how you can support LSP. Thanks for listening.